Debug is brought to you today by MailRoute. Now, we all know email has become a hassle. It is filled with spam, clogged with viruses, replete with bounced emails. It has just become unenjoyable to even deal with. MailRoute fixes all that. With MailRoute, there's no hardware, there's no software, nothing to install, nothing to maintain. You just sign up for MailRoute, it receives your email, it sorts it, it removes all the junk, all the spam, all the bounces, all the stuff you don't want to have to deal with, and it gives you the clean email that you actually enjoy and want to read. So MailRoute's interface lets you view and manage your email, tweak your filter settings, control everything per domain, per user. They've even built their interface and tools with admins and developers in mind. They have an API for easy account management. To remove spam from your life for good, go to MailRoute.net/debug. You'll get a free trial, 10% off for the lifetime of your account, and you will actually enjoy opening your inbox again. That's MailRoute.net/debug.
Hi, everybody.
All right.
This is, we're going to do a debug roundtable, cowboy style. Just, you know, a few hours after the Apple announcements today. Joining us are Rene Ritchie, as always, who's tucked up in a hotel room in, where are you, Rene? San Francisco? Cupertino?
I'm in Sunnyvale. Yeah, I was one of the last people kicked out of the demo area and then I came straight here.
Okay. So you're in nowhere land, basically.
Sunnyvale, yeah. California.
Well, you know, if you're not in Montreal, you're nowhere.
It's the neighbor to Cupertino.
Exactly. That's our friend Vicky Murley, thank you for hanging out today.
Sure.
And who else we got? Kyle?
Hi, Guy.
How you doing? Kyle Richter? Martian Craft?
Fantastic.
And Brent Simmons?
Hey, Guy.
Hey, everybody.
Of Cube Ranch.
Just call me Q.
Q. I call you cute all the time.
Come on. Yeah, you do. I know. On account of the fact that I'm really, really cute.
You're adorable. Mm-hmm. Totes adorbs.
I know. Yeah.
Exactly. So we thought we'd, you know, get a bunch of smart people together and kind of go over the announcements today. So, go.
Well, I mean, I'm wondering if my pants are big enough for the big phone. If they are, I'm getting the big phone.
That is a big ass phone.
Yeah. The thing is, if I go into an Apple store and say, well, I just want to, you know, put it in my pocket, will that be okay? Will they let me do that?
It depends if you're still wearing cargo pants or not, I guess.
Yeah, I'm wearing jeans. But, you know, big boy pants, so.
So you're going to go for the
you're going to need bigger pants.
5.5 or the 4.7?
Yeah, I'm thinking 5.5, unless I literally can't actually carry it around.
So that's a good first question for everybody. Are you excited about it, or is it a necessity?
Well, I'm excited about it. It's obviously we have to have all the devices for the testing and such. But I like the idea of a bigger screen. You know, I get more stuff on there. Can scroll less.
Have you always liked that idea?
Yeah, actually, I have. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, obviously, Android's been shipping these for a while, right?
Yeah, and I've teased my Android using friend singular mercilessly about it.
You probably don't want it. You've got a token Android friend.
Yeah, Nick Bradbury, our Android developer.
He's a great guy.
He's a wonderful guy, so he can take the teasing. Tell him he's carrying an aircraft carrier around.
Right.
Of course, I will be too, maybe.
Yeah. Did you find the current screen too small?
Not too small, but I really enjoyed the bump in size with the iPhone 5. I thought that was a really nice increase. And I thought to myself, if that was nice, well then, you know, kind of like with drinking, well, maybe more is even better. So.
That's not what they say about drinking.
Do I have something fundamentally wrong about it? Yeah, maybe I do.
Right.
I do sort of feel like one thing that was missing from the keynote today was a lot of keynotes in the past have started off with like all the reasons why you need something. Like, oh, we want an easier way to share photos or an easier way to, you know, make home movies and share them or whatever. But this just sort of dove into like, there's a bigger screen and without really talking about like all the reasons why you would want a bigger screen. And even now we're talking about it and we're sort of like, oh yeah, well, I just want a bigger screen. And it's hard to pinpoint exactly why. And our competitors have bigger screens and maybe that's why we need them. I'm not exactly sure.
Right. It's most often presented as like, here's the problem and here's the solution.
Right.
And it didn't fit that sort.
You'd have Steve kind of coming out with his, you know, very down to earth attitude of like, so I had this thing that I wanted to do, you know, and I'm the CEO of Apple, so I made it happen. And with this, it's sort of like, well, what is the thing that you wanted to do? And there probably are things like, you know, play games on a bigger screen, or like the split view in Messages is really nice, you know, and things like that, or make the experience more personal by showing the avatar in Messages. But none of those things were really like talked about before they dove into it, which I thought was a little interesting. Maybe I just noticed that as a person who's given a lot of presentations and watched a lot of presentations, but I definitely thought about it.
It could be a time constraint thing, but that's true. It is totally different. Kyle, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the faster car. I mean, we don't need a car that goes faster in 65, but we want cars that go faster in 65. And we don't need an iPhone 5.5-inch screen, but we want an iPhone with a 5.5-inch screen. It's not solving a problem. It's just solving our need for something more powerful and bigger and faster.
Yeah, I think it's good marketing, though, to like, I don't need a faster car, but it's sort of about, like, it's the car company's job to make me think I need it. You know, like, oh, haven't you ever wanted to, you know, feel this crazy acceleration? I may never have thought of that, but if I see a commercial, car commercial that talks about that, I may realize that that's what I wanted. You know,
I think Apple did a pretty good job of making us feel like we need this phone. If you were to ask me yesterday if I needed a phone the size of a Pop-Tart, I would have told you no. But you know, here we are a few hours later. And, yeah, I'm waiting for my Pop-Tart phone.
Totally.
I think there is one problem. I think it solves pretty well, though. They didn't talk about it, but it's a big one for me, is that reading on this, on the big one, is going to be a lot easier. There are times when I'm like, oh, where's my iPad? I want to do some reading. With that big phone, that's, you know, close enough, right? That's going to do pretty darn well as a reading device.
So I use...
Did you guys see it has two modes?
What's that?
The phone has two modes. So you can basically, you can have it in normal mode where it gives you more pixels, or you can switch it to a scaled up mode where it gives you the same amount of pixels but blown up to fill the screen to make it easier to read.
That's fantastic. Yeah. My eyes could, they would thank Apple for that. Yep.
Really? That's a that's
the other thing that was interesting to me at least.
How do you switch the modes, Sune?
Yeah, it doesn't say, but it looks like it's a setting, because if you go to the iPhone-6 page / display at the very, very bottom of the page, it shows you that it has this new display mode that's basically scaled up. And the other interesting thing is on the 5.5-inch phone, if you rotate it, it goes into iPad mode and gives you the split view. So mail and contacts and everything gives you the two-column view. So you can basically have one device that's an iPhone in portrait and an iPad in landscape.
So that to me is interesting. Yeah, exactly. If I buy one of these, which obviously I'm going to do, I'm going to get the 6 Plus just because of the way that landscape demi iPad sort of mode comes up. I imagine I can test in the simulator, but I'm going to need some hardware to actually work on it with. And it's like, it's again, it's that classic thing where you're like, well, I need it for work. I'd probably just go buy it anyway because I'm an idiot and I'm going to buy everything all the time. But the 5.5 is interesting because I've never bought an iPad mini.
I was just thinking about iPad mini.
Right. It kind of gets squeezed out a little bit, right?
Yeah. I was thinking, where will it be a year from now?
Do you have one?
Well, that's one of the theories is that it's
I don't have an iPad mini.
Because I use my iPad primarily for video.
Hmm.
I mean, I do read on it. I read books on it, like iBooks on it. Mm-hmm. But my major case is like, I'll just put Netflix on and watch House of Cards forever.
For days.
Yeah, for pretty much days on end.
There's two interesting bits of fallout from this. One is that there's a theory that getting a bigger phone will push people towards bigger iPads, including maybe a 13-inch iPad next year. But the other thing is that having an iPhone that can show both iPhone and iPad interfaces is going to push developers into making universal apps instead of separate apps.
Yeah, well, so I think those are two separate things. So Vicky, would you be likely to buy an iPad mini or one of these phones, like a big ass phone?
I don't think I would get the 6 Plus.
Okay.
Just because I just don't want to carry something that I don't mind carrying something that large around. I think it's maybe holding it up to my face would feel weird. Like I'm holding, you know, an iPad mini up to my face. I mean, I guess unlike Renee, I didn't get to see, you know, the hardware in person today. So who knows how it will actually feel.
One of the theories we've heard bantered around is that women may prefer these larger phones because they can put them in their purse. So it,
you know, when someone was mentioning earlier about fitting it inside a pocket, I was like, no problem here. Right. Although I almost never put my phone inside my purse or bag because it's usually silent and vibrate only. Right. So if it's inside my bag, I can't, feel if I get a message or something. And since I'm addicted to my phone, that's unacceptable.
Right.
So even though I'm usually carrying a bag, I usually have it in a pocket. So
yeah, I mean, every
so
time
around
I
the
that,
house, you're not carrying your purse though either, right?
Right.
True. But then I switch my phone so that it's making noise whenever something happens.
Isn't that the big selling point for the Apple Watch though? So you don't need to always have your phone right on top of you.
I don't know. It's gonna be tough to see which addiction wins out after I get a watch. Will it be constantly looking at my watch or always checking my phone? I'm not sure. But I'm very excited about the watch. That's again something that I didn't know I needed, but now I definitely want it. So.
You didn't know you needed.
I didn't know I needed it until today. Now I'm
it's
sure
still
that
optional,
I need it.
But
I probably need two,
no.
In fact.
No.
So.
Right. Yeah, we need it.
Yeah.
Sticking to the phone for a minute. What are the development concerns regarding the 5.5 versus 4.7 screen?
I mean, the big one for me is, you know, the 5.5, as far as I can tell, is the only one that supports that enhanced landscape dual screen type mode,
right.
Which means as developers, if you want the 4.7 as a carry device, you still have to get the 5.5 because we don't have the 5.5 iPad or the 5.5 iPods yet. So we're kind of in this dual handset requirement phase for a little bit.
I think Apple showed in the session at DubDub on the adaptive UI that you can actually, as a developer, you can opt in for 4-inch, 4.7-inch, or 5.5-inch. Apple's only opting in for 5.5.
Yeah. I mean, a simulator is one thing, but anybody worth their salt is going to want an actual device to test on. Brent, I imagine you've... or at least Dave has been dispatched to think about this for Vesper.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely thinking about that split view and what makes
right.
sense there. And, you know, our app is a fairly typical thing with three levels of hierarchy. So, well, which one do we want to put there is really the big question. Is it the list of tags or is it the list of notes? I have an opinion. I think Dave's might be different from mine.
Interesting.
So a lot of thinking to do there. Yeah.
It's the list of notes for me.
Duh.
Right.
Totally right. I mean, geez.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Well,
no,
I mean, we'll
Davis,
see how that,
but...
yeah. Oh, man. I'm arguing with Whiskers. He's not even around.
No, so. I can see both points. Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah. Kyle? Was that you?
No, that wasn't me. I was laughing at the arguing at Whiskers comment.
Okay. Yeah, I can see the list of tags being a thing, but no, when you rotate, it's got to be the list of notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the only
right,
thing
yeah.
that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, yep, yep. So we'll get that worked out. And yeah, and what I find very interesting is how the line between iPad and iPhone is blurring here.
Right.
You know, and they so made that clear with size classes, you know, that this was coming. But yeah, it's as if the only difference now is that, well, the iPad's not actually a phone, even though you can talk to people on it. But
right. So are we going to make a distinction anymore?
That would be an amazingly bold move if they killed the iPad line and it was just phones of various sizes and some weren't actually phones. Yeah, that would not make a lot of sense. But it's almost like that's the truth. It's just different sizes right. of iOS devices.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, I mean, that is the truth, right? Like,
yes.
It's like that UI idiom thing is not necessarily useful anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and the devices have different capabilities, which you already have API to discover.
Sure.
You know, right. And so, hey.
Well, the difference is you have different aspect ratios, the 69 and the 4x3, and some the smaller ones have phone.app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but phone.app is not something that developers can interact with anyway in a meaningful way. No. So that doesn't matter from our perspective. What matters is, you know, getting that list of notes up on the side of a 5.5 display and an iPad, I guess.
Yeah.
Kyle, have you had much time to think about this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been rattling around here all day as right. we're dealing with clients and stuff, calling and asking us the same exact questions that we're asking ourselves right now. You know, as far as specifically whether the iPad can become phones, I mean, they're missing two big things. The first is the phone app, which is a real easy fix. And the second's a receiver mic or a receiver speaker, which isn't an easy fix. But I mean, frankly, how many people don't use headphones and stuff now anyways? So,
right.
Yeah. And even with Skype without the phone app, you can really use the iPad as a phone. The reason that people don't is because they don't want to lug around that thing, you know, while they're chatting on the phone. That raises the questions of what do we do with the 5.5 inch iPhone again? Is that too big to really lug around?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I think they may end up cannibalizing a lot of their own iPad mini sales, which is probably fine. I mean,
I'd argue they'd cannibalize all of their iPad sales with this big one. There'll be people who say, you know, I just save some money. I'll get one. I'll get the biggest thing right in the middle, and then I'm done.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They'd probably be happy to because the phone margins are way bigger than the patent.
Sure, and they sell so many more. Yeah.
Hey, really, what can you do on a 5.5-inch iPhone that you know, that an iPad can't do? I mean, you watch movies at a little bit higher, you know, screen width, but it doesn't really add much to it anymore to have an iPad.
Yeah, that's true. I do. I mean, that's why I've never gone to the iPad mini is because I like having the bigger screen to watch my TV, my often horrible TV that I watch when I'm trying to go to sleep. Yeah.
Likewise.
Vicky, what do you think?
Will it cannibalize sales of iPads?
Yeah. I mean, or at least for you, what are you more likely to buy?
I would not get a huge phone. I think I'm probably in the minority in this conversation, but I like having a bigger screen for certain things too, like reading a book, browsing the web. I have my laptop hooked up to a big monitor in my office, so if I just want to browse the web quickly for something, I'll use my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Watching TV and movies. I don't know. And I don't think it would be the first time that, you know, people speculated that one Apple product would cannibalize the sales of another.
Right.
And sometimes that's happened and sometimes it hasn't. But it seems like there's sort of an audience for everything a lot of the time. I'm convinced.
I'm kind of disappointed that they don't have a smaller screen version because I don't like big phones. And if I get an iPhone 6, it's going to be quite a lot bigger than my current 5S, right? Was that, do we think that that was competition just dragging them to make it bigger, or is just bigger better? I'm not convinced that that's the case.
Yeah, I was really confused that they went from the 4 inch to 4.7 and the 5.5 without maintaining the normal iPhone screen size. It seemed like a departure from what would make sense there, as opposed to just offering one big one to suddenly offer two completely new sizes. So I don't know where that came from either.
Are you going to miss anybody else?
The 4.7 doesn't. Sorry, I was going to say the 4.7 inch doesn't feel that much bigger. And granted, I've got a Nokia 1020, I've got a Nexus 5, I've got a BlackBerry Z10, so I'm used to bigger phones. But this, it's so thin, it's rounded, it looks like an iPhone, and the 5.5 does feel like a much bigger phone, but the 4.7 doesn't really feel like a much bigger phone, and that's surprising.
Now, Renee, did you play with the 4.7 after seeing the 5.5, or did you see one before the other? Because I think that might skew, you know, your perspective on it.
They gave me both at the same time. They gave me both. Oh, actually, no, I got the 4.7 first because someone was talking about the 5.5, and then I got the 5.5. And I had my iPhone 5S with me, so I was using that all day. And going to the 4.7, it really didn't feel that different. It's just the screen was so big. It's almost like I was hesitant when they made a 4-inch iPhone because I was so used to 3.5. Right. And then a couple months later, the 3.5-inch iPhone looked like an iPhone mini. And I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen with this too. We're going to look back and say, wow, that's small.
How's the reach? I mean, can you hit the, like the classic close button is on the top right corner, right? Is that a pain in the ass to hit on either? 4.7, I guess, would be the most.
Yeah. On the 4.7, no. I mean, it was the grip changed for me when I went to the 4-inch iPhone anyway, just to reach the corner. On the 5.5-inch, because Touch ID is capacitive, you can do gestures as well as clicks. So instead of just the one click, two click, three clicks, you can just touch the button twice, and it pulls the whole interface down, making it easier for you to reach the corner. And it looks really, really goofy, but it works.
Wait, can you explain that a little bit better? I hadn't heard of that before. You can drag the whole screen downwards?
So on the 5.5-inch iPhone, if you touch the home button, not press it, but just touch it, it activates the capacitive sensor, so it can register touch as well as click. So you touch it twice, and the entire home screen moves down to halfway, basically pulls it halfway down the screen, and then you can reach the top. Whether it's the messages app or a cancel button, and then as soon as you hit it, it goes back to full screen again.
That's a hack.
Yeah, I was just thinking that feels like a really hacky kind of fix. Is the phone's not big enough for you to hit with your thumb anymore, so you tap a button and the whole thing moves towards your thumb.
That's weird. Yeah.
So Renee, were you always like holding the 5.5 in one hand, or did you find yourself like holding it in one hand and using the other hand to like interact with it?
No, because I got used to using that double touch so quickly, I could use it one-handed. I use an iPad two-handed, obviously. I use an iPhone almost always one-handed, and this, after about 30 seconds, it was fine. It was a little bit goofy. And when I went to landscape, I used two hands because it's just so wide. But then it looks like an iPad, and it felt like an iPad at that point.
Yeah, it's funny. None of us are excited about that news. That just seems weird. I guess we'll.
Everyone's like,
Yeah, we'll have to try it.
I mean, if you look at it, the problem that they had is that iPhone traditionally had the controls on the top, Android had them at the bottom, so with the bigger screens. Yeah, there's goofy Samsung modes, but there were a lot of all the buttons are right on the bottom. Maybe I don't know if iOS buttons are moved to the bottom, but as long as they're at the top, you have to be able to reach the top.
Well, I agree with that. I just don't know if I agree with the solution that they've got right now. Although, again, I haven't tried it, so who knows?
It's always true that software fixes hardware. So in this case, it's just the hardware size that needs adjusting. So. There's a software fix for everything.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get my thumb extended.
That's
or a surgical fix.
Yes. That's it. It's time for surgery, folks.
Somebody's going to make a thumb accessory that extends the width of your thumb with a stylus tip to it. It's coming. Somebody's working on it right now.
I think so.
You just gave someone a free idea. Hey, there it is.
There you go, world. You can have that one.
Yeah, we're giving out million-dollar ideas.
Yep. Future millionaire. Just heard that.
So the watch. How cool is that? Looks pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
I don't know how huge it's going to be, but it looks pretty cool. Would you wear one, Vicky?
I would wear one. Before the announcements today, I was talking with someone about watches, wearables. And I was like, well, my watch is also sort of like, not exactly like jewelry. I mean, it's just like silver and white. You know, it's not like crazy, but I wear it so that I don't have to look at my phone all the time to check, to see what time it is. And okay. Also because I like the way it looks, okay. You know?
Is it primarily functional or is it primarily decorative or jewelry?
I would say it's like, maybe 50-50 because yeah. If I don't have my watch on, I don't feel like I'm missing something for the whole day.
Right.
But when I do have it on, it's nice to not have to look at my phone all the time.
Yeah. I know for me, when I put my watch on, it's basically jewelry. Because most of the time I don't wear it, but if I dress up nice, I'll put my old nice watch on. Kyle, do you wear a watch?
I do, and I've been wearing one most of my life, so I'm that weird test market that I've already come in with something on my wrist.
Right.
Yeah, the iWatch or the Apple Watch looks absolutely amazing. I mean, you know, it does everything I would want a watch to do, but Apple's been a little bit too quiet on battery life and water resistance. And yeah, I can't see how a watch that, you know, has a sleep timer that turns off in a couple of seconds and needs to be charged every day can replace the watch I'm currently used to wearing that I can just kind of quickly glance at without having to, you know, tap a sleep timer and use two hands on it. And the watch for me is a lot of, you know, just very quickly checking the time to make sure that, you know, I'm on schedule. But
yeah. Yeah. What do you wear now?
I have a whole bunch that I wear. I'm currently wearing a Timex Weekender, but my preferred watch is a Citizen Echo Drive. Which unfortunately is
that's cool.
The solar powered ones that never need a battery. So as you can imagine, a one day Apple Watch battery is a sharp leap from never needing a battery.
Yeah, that's the big thing for me is I want my watch to always be working. Like the watch that I do wear,
it,
you know, just auto winds. And
I think the tapping to check the time is a little, oops, sorry.
Obviously, the dog has something to weigh in here on the Apple Watch. I think we should let him talk.
Yeah. I got to say, that is an adorable dog, though. I've seen pictures.
I'm muting. Hang on.
If you're curious, they do have a new MagSafe inductive charging thing. So you put it on every night. It just hooks onto the back. And it's not waterproof, but it's water resistant, so it can survive a shower, but it can't survive.
Well, that's a big part of the battle. A shower is, you know, I think what most people are concerned with, but you know, swim would obviously be fantastic too. And as a scuba diver, when watching, I couldn't help but think that would be the most amazing dive watch ever, being able to communicate with people because communication, you know, 50 feet under the water is pretty hard, but if you could tap and draw and stuff on it, that'd be an incredible dive watch.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, although I think the water would kill the capacitance screen.
Oh, most certainly. Yeah.
It's all electrical based. Yeah. Oh, and I should mention it will turn on its own, like the same way an iPhone used to do, it does the raise to speak, and now it does the raise to send and receive text messages. When you raise it up, it'll turn on.
So you don't need to tap it?
Okay. No. If the motion sensor detects you bringing it up in almost like a motion that you want to look at it, it'll turn on the screen.
Oh, that's cool. So it's there just in time.
Zing. Zing.
Yeah, just in time screen.
Brent, would you get one?
Yeah, I'll definitely get one. Today I went for a jog, and it was the first day I went for a jog cursing that I don't have an Apple Watch
really
with me.
Okay.
So,
So it's not just for job stuff. It's You want?
No, one. I want one for myself. I like the fitness aspect of it an awful lot. I think that stuff is cool. And I've been putting off getting a Fitbit because I figured something like this was coming.
Yeah, so you don't have a Fitbit or a Jawbone thing or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about this. I currently do wear a watch, though, and I'll have to stop wearing that watch.
Yeah, you have a pretty nice watch, don't you? What
do
you wear?
It's a mid-60s Hamilton that my dad had gotten for his high school graduation. My dad will understand, though. He'll forgive me.
And you'll trade that for an Apple Watch and be happy with it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In terms of jewelry or in terms of functionality?
I think that my old Hamilton looks awesome, and there may be occasions for, you know, well, I'm just, you know, I'm at a wedding or something, and so I'll wear the nicer, older watch. But, you know, the rest of the time, yeah, the Apple Watch would be awesome.
Can I ask you, Brent, which one interests you? Because there's the Apple Watch, there's the Apple Watch Sport, which is, you know, has a different finish and different bands, and then there's the Apple Watch Edition, which is real gold plated and has all the fancy bands.
So I'll probably, you know, reserve my old fashioned watch, old style watch for the real fancy stuff. So I'll probably, there's a good chance I'll get the Sport Edition.
Really?
Yep.
Because of the durability or?
Just because, well, a big use case for me really is, you know, my daily jog.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I wanted to stand up to that.
We're going to take a quick break so I can tell you about Hired. Hired lets you enter 1 week auctions and get 5 to 15 upfront job offers. The average offer on Hired is for $130,000, and each offer has salary and equity upfront. You get to view the offers and accept or reject them before talking to the company. Transparency means it is an even playing field, and you can pick offers that are right for you. 90% of users receive job offers, users average 5+ offers, and most receive 5 to 15. Some have even gotten 25+. Hired is working with thousands of companies in San Francisco, New York City, and LA. They give you unprecedented distribution. Some of those companies are like Twitter, American Express, Postmates, Mixplane, Quirky, Whisper, Riot Games, Birchbox, and literally hundreds more. There's free, there's no obligation. If you're looking for a job, go to Hired. They will send you a $2,000 signing bonus when you take your first job. But if you sign up through hired.com/debugcast, Hired will give you a double bonus, a $4,000 bonus when you accept an offer. So once again, go to hired.com/debugpodcast, get 5 to 15 job offers in San Francisco, New York, and Los Angeles, and get a double signing bonus, a $4,000 bonus when you accept a job offer using the hired.com/debugcast URL.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wear a Fitbit. I'm on my third one of those. So the fitness aspect of it is fantastic for me, but it feels like the Apple Watch is something to really get the best health reading out of it. You wear it 24/7. So I might be one of those super geeks who winds up with two watches on my arm. we'll see how it plays out. You know, typically when I see an Apple announcement, you have that reality distortion feel when it first announces where you're like, oh, that's really cool. And then by the time it's actually out in the store, you're like, eh, and then you go and play with it in the store and you're like, all right, that's really cool. I'm all over the place. I'm definitely going to have one, you know, for work, but, yeah.
Do you know which one though? Like the regular one, the sport one, or please God, don't say the, what do they call it? Apple Watch Edition?
The bling bling watch.
The gold one.
Yeah.
Wow, I think please don't say that. That was very strong.
Yeah. Well, you know, I ask the impartial questions around here.
Yeah, that's, I guess so.
I think the sport one makes the most sense for what I would use it for. But as a connoisseur of, you know, halfway decent watches, that middle one that they have is, yeah, really the most appealing one. So I'll probably end up with that one unless they start giving away some, you know, free spinners with the gold one, in which case I'll pimp out my Subaru.
Vicky, you're gonna get the gold one, I guess?
I'm gonna get that one just to spite you, basically. So
that's why most people do what they do. That's all right.
Just to stick it to me.
Yeah. Vicky, did you notice they didn't show any?
I did notice that. Interesting. Don't know that that's necessarily a bad choice, though. I mean, their graphic where they showed, you know, here's what it would look like if you tried to pinch to zoom on a watch was pretty compelling. So I'm not sure it would be easy to read web pages on your watch.
I don't know if it makes sense to do so.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't think
there's a certain amount of just wrist fatigue, like holding your arm up to your face, right?
I don't want to have to work out to wear my Apple Sport watch and browse the web on it. So.
You could get prizes from it, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd go for either the Sport or the Edition, I think. Those make the most sense. I like this thing where Apple's sort of focusing on people's health and fitness. It's kind of an interesting turn, I think.
Yeah, it's I mean, they haven't really addressed that directly before. They have kind of, and that they've teamed up with Nike for many years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what was the first one? Like the Nike thing that you could stick on your shoe?
Yeah, Nike Plus.
That was it. Yeah. But yeah, this seems like it, right? This seems like a major push into that direction.
I think it's Tim Cook's, you know, passion is, you know, Steve Jobs really pushed the music industry, and you know, we've all known that Tim Cook was a very big supporter of health and fitness, and you know, eating right and that kind of stuff. I think this is, you know, his iPod.
That could be, and that's an interesting question. Is why isn't this called an iPod?
Because it's a watch.
Because it's a watch. that's probably the best answer, honestly.
It's a headphone jack.
Does it play music? Did they show music playing from this thing anywhere? Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it'll play both music stored on it, and it'll let you control music.
I just like the name iPod so much that... It's almost a shame that iPod got attached to just being a music thing because the name's so great. And this is an accessory for an iPhone, which is kind of a bold move. So the addressable market is limited to anybody that's bought an iPhone 5 and up, right? Which is not a small market, but it does limit the potential success of this device.
That is a market full of people with money who have a proven track record of buying Apple stuff.
Yeah. Like us idiots.
Yeah, exactly.
It's first generation too. I mean, this has early adopters written all over it. Yeah, this isn't going to be mass market for a couple of generations, I don't think.
Yeah. Anybody want to take a guess on the battery?
24 hours is what I've been thinking. Cause I mean, the best indication we had is, you know, you charge it at night. Which, yeah, that screams daily charge.
Yeah.
That screams it's run out of batteries before the bar closes.
Yeah, I think it's 12 hours.
Yeah, I would have guessed 10 to 12 hours. I mean, iPads are what, 10? And that's just not good enough for a watch.
Yep. That's what this is, too, I believe. Like, it's not 24 hours.
Did you ask any? I mean, people must have been asking that. Yeah. And what?
Yeah, I asked tons of them. They were really good at answering questions. And yeah, they said you've got to charge it every night, which is why they tried to make that fancy new MagSafe inductive charger. One thing that was really interesting, Guy, that might appeal to you is they clearly said 4.7 and 5.5 inch iPhone, but for the iWatch, they would only talk in millimeters. It's 38 millimeters and 42 millimeters. And it doesn't sound like...
Oh, it's interesting. Why? Because I'm a... Because of my metric ranting?
Yes. So the watch is metric. The phone is imperial.
Okay, now I don't want to watch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that's usually how they talk about watches, right? Because they're often from Europe. So most everything's measured in millimeters. Are we going to write software for this? What's Vesper on the watch going to look like, Brent?
Oh, it's going to be small.
It'll be a wee little Vesper.
Yes. Yeah, probably. I mean, gosh, how could I not, right?
Yeah.
I have to. It's more new UI territory. We haven't had that in a while. And that's so much fun and so exciting that, yeah. I'm not going to announce that definitively because I
didn't
talk to my people about it, but Jesus Christ, come on. Of course. Yeah, right.
So here's an interesting thing. It's watch kit. What does that mean?
There's two. So you have watch kit, which will let you do interactive notifications and glanceable widgets. And then you're also going to have native apps.
Okay.
So that I did not know. Cause WatchKit sounds like something that you would write into your iOS, you would include in your iOS app somewhere in the bundle, and it would effectively project the UI onto the watch, which is totally distinct from a native watch app. I was actually surprised that they had any third party support out of the gate. Well, in a way, it seems like they had to have it because all of the other stuff has it. But in another way, since it's totally new, I mean, they didn't have it for the phone for the first release, or you guys didn't have it for the phone for the first release, right?
Yeah, we saw how that went, though. I mean, everybody freaked out.
Yeah, but you can still launch a product and have a pretty good hit without having a, you know, an SDK on day one.
In 2007, you could. Well, yeah.
Maybe
Apple TV's
maybe
a hobby
true project.
I mean, we're still not seeing huge amounts of Apple TV sales.
Yeah.
Will we see a huge amount of watch sales yet? I mean, it could be Apple TV size or it could be iPad size.
Well,
I don't know yet.
Either one, you're pretty much winning because Apple TV is actually a pretty decent business.
Yeah, right. I mean, I would be thrilled to have a company that just, you know, owned the Apple TV in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. That's a $1 billion company by itself. I was going to mention that the price points on the watches too are going to be, very prohibitive. I mean, so Renee, they announced the lowest price, the entry price of $349, which I assume is, the bare minimum sport model. Do you have any indication of how high the price is going to go on these?
No, they wouldn't say yet. I don't think we'll hear.
They wouldn't say?
I mean, the same thing. Like, they said it. No, like, there's things they wouldn't answer. Like, they would say it's watchOS. It's not iOS. The same way that they didn't want to put OS 10 onto a phone. They didn't want to put iOS onto a watch. They wanted something distinct, but they wouldn't give any information. Like, they didn't say whether it had the same kernel, didn't say whether they had anything similar. I'm assuming there probably are similarities, but they wouldn't say any details about it.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So, research project. Yeah. I'm going to find all I can out about that. I mean, clearly they've killed Springboard and all of that, right? So.
But you're going to write for it using Swift or Objective-C and the SDK.
Well, there's still a Springboard, right? They had that kind of mesh of apps, a universe, I think they called it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is still that concept, but it seems like they tossed the actual thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know how you would fit it on that display.
There's neighborhoods of bubbly apps.
That mesh was kind of weird, too. I don't know how you navigate that.
That's using the crown. So the crown lets you, they use that crown, the digital crown, as a navigation device because they don't want gestures to obscure the screen. So you press that once and you go from the watch to the home screen. So the watch is really the home screen. The springboard or the launcher is a secondary screen. And then you can use the crown again to zoom in, and then you can zoom into like neighborhoods of apps, I think they call them. And that lets you choose them more easily. You can
That's interesting. That Did you get much time with it?
So the ones that they let you wear weren't live. They were running demo software, so they would automate you through a bunch of things, like using the taptic thing to vibrate your wrist, and it would take you through the apps like a guided tour. Only the Apple people had the real ones on, and they were basically doing golden path stuff. They would only show you a few things, and that didn't include third-party apps.
And when they mentioned, like, what was it, the Starwood hotels and things like that, and the mock-up that they had on the screen looked like it's something they gave Starwood yesterday. I was like, hey, we're making a watch. What do you want to do? I don't think third-party developers got a lot of time with these before they were released. I think, at the most, a couple of days.
I think it was at least I started hearing about it several weeks ago. So it might have been, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks. And those were the big companies, like, I guess, like Facebooks and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, Facebook and Twitter are built in. I saw a lot of people from, you know, the Facebook and Twitter teams in that room today. So, yeah, maybe those kind of tight integration ones that are built into the OS were kind of ahead of the curve. But I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens with the third-party stuff on it. There's a lot of possibilities, that's for sure.
All right. Do we have a release date on this other than early 2015?
Early 2015, and then they said part of it would start working in the spring. So I'm guessing, you know, spring, early 2015.
So that's...
One thing that was super interesting, though, is the security on the watch, because there's no Touch ID. You put a PIN number in, and then it basically uses your skin contact to unlock the device. And the minute that skin contact is broken, once the sensors leave the skin on your wrist, the watch locks again, and it won't unlock until you put it back on. And
that's pretty cool. Again.
That way, so if someone steals it from you or you drop it, they can't access your payment information and stuff.
Right. Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to talk about, was the payment stuff. So you don't, there's no Touch ID on the watch. You put it on, you type in a PIN, and then it's, I guess, unlocked for payments, right?
Yep. And it uses NFC like iPhone 6s do.
How cool is that payments thing? Are we excited about that or what? You guys actually get to use it. Us Canadian idiots are stuck up here in the cold.
I think so. I think, you know, making payments easier and more secure. More secure actually matters. I mean, everybody, it seems like, has had credit card fraud. Mm-hmm. Happens almost every time I go to San Francisco for some reason. Maybe that's because the only place I go. Anyway, more security, definitely a very cool thing. Yeah.
And the fact that Apple doesn't know what you're doing is kind of interesting too.
I like that a lot. I don't like companies knowing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Not that it's that nefarious, but.
Right. Not that I don't trust Apple, but I honestly think they just don't want the liability.
Yeah.
Their business model is not to have this kind of data, and they just don't want the liability of having some kind of problem based around it.
Well, and I think it's just sort of like the do good, do no evil kind of mentality. I mean, most of the time when a company is collecting information about what you're doing, it's so that they can show you an ad later, you know, right. Like, oh, you ran 5 miles today. Did you know that these shoes are available for 20% off for today only or whatever? And, right. Since Apple doesn't get the majority of their revenue from ads, they don't need to do that. So that is a big point for me, people not collecting my info.
Yeah. I mean, is that them leaving money on the table though? Or
I don't think so. I mean, it's something that makes Apple distinct from most other companies, I think.
Right.
So
no, I tend to agree. I mean, I think you can make a lot of money that way, but, you know, you can also make a lot of money selling $40 watch straps.
Totally.
Or, yeah.
Or like iPad cases or whatever the hell it is, you know? So.
This makes the high margin harder.
Exactly.
Apple is just never in the market of, you know, users' data. That's always been, you know, kind of Google's foray. So I've never worried about Apple reselling my data. It just never occurred to me that they would be interested in it.
Yeah. What do you think about the payment stuff, Kyle? Can you talk about it?
Yeah, it's super interesting stuff. And I think a lot of companies have tried to reinvent the payment stuff, especially over the last decade or so. And unfortunately, they haven't had the reach that was needed. To see Apple partner with all those banks and those companies just right off the bat, I think it's super interesting what could potentially happen with it. I think we're seeing the real early phases of it too. I was definitely surprised that they kind of seemed to rebrand Near Field Communication to Apple Pay, which yep. I don't get. I assume that there's something in there that I'm missing that makes it more than just Near Field Communication, but it felt like they just took something that already existed and slapped an Apple logo in front of it. But yeah, you know, the real challenge is going to be to get all those businesses to, you know, put these readers into their stores. Cause, you know, even today, I don't see too many of those NFC terminals, but if Apple can get behind this and even get 10% of the people using it, that will spread, and you know, near field communication is going to become a reality really quick.
So yeah,
there's one company that can do it. I think it's going to be Apple, and it's ambitious and it's a hell of a drive. But yeah, the stock market is definitely behind them. You know, when the Apple stock today just jumped at that, because you know, if Apple's taking, you know, a percent and three quarters of a sale, which is, you know, on the low side of typical for credit card processing, and you have huge amounts of people using their credit card processing system, you know, suddenly Apple's raking in billions of dollars.
Yes, yeah, just money hand over fist. Yeah.
So I think it's really appealing for the longevity and safety of, you know, Apple growing and moving forward.
Vinay, did you get a chance to ask anybody about that, or were they not forthcoming?
No, the Apple Pay stuff was amongst the most forthcoming things that they talked about, and I got to talk to the guy for a while. So NFC is just one part of it. NFC is the transaction that you do when you're in a physical retailer, and they do say it's NFC, and this NFC reader is visible. Apple Pay is the transactional system. So in a physical location, it stores all of your credit card details. They'll automatically take them out of iTunes for whatever credit card is there. You can photograph and authorize and add more credit cards, and to use Touch ID to approve the transaction. You can switch cards the way you switch passes in Passbook. Very quick to do. Then it has the other concept, the other part, which is the online part. And then you have to have like a Target app or an Apple retail app, or you know, basically any retailer can make an app. And you can buy from them online, and then you authorize with Apple Pay that way as well. The same way you do Easy Pay in the old Apple Store app, where you would, you know, press the button and then enter your iTunes password and pay with your iTunes account. Now it's just an Apple Pay button on all of those apps. You tap it, you authorize it, and you pay. And Apple Pay covers both.
That's interesting. So it kind of combines a few different things under one umbrella.
Yeah, so it's a consistent user experience to handle two different kinds of transactions, real world. So
I think a lot of what we're going to see more of now, too, that a lot of clients and big companies have been kind of steering away from is using the iPhone to purchase physical goods, Amazon-type stuff. And with the Apple Pay integrated into it, I think we're going to be seeing like a lot of pizza delivery apps and stuff that allow just Apple payment through it. And those companies have traditionally kind of steered away from that mentality on the iPhone.
Yeah, you could use it at the McDonald's drive thru. They made sure they.
Yeah, right after they talked about the health kit stuff, which I appreciate them kind of sandwiching that between two healthy things. And then right afterwards, they mentioned Whole Foods.
Right.
So they're definitely trying to downplay that a little bit. At the same time, you know, McDonald's is an absolutely massive, you know, organization. So
was it me or was it very San Francisco that people cheered after Whole Foods came up and then everybody cheered? Which is weird. Maybe I'm crazy.
There is a Whole Foods right down the street from it's almost right across the street from Flint Center. So it's very close to Apple. It is kind of a Bay Area thing, though, I think.
It seems, yeah. We don't have those out here.
Very California, yeah. You know.
Would you be comfortable paying with your watch?
I think so. But you know, I'm their early adopter audience,
right.
You know, whether or not my, you know, mom or dad or grandma or grandpa would be comfortable doing that is probably another story.
Well, I think it's probably more like.
Well, I mean, Brent can go running without his wallet. Brent can go running without his wallet. He can just wear the watch and, you know, theoretically pay for stuff in a store if he wants to get a Gatorade.
True. Yeah.
And part of that. But wait, so can you use the watch in this capacity without having the phone in your pocket? Like, what are the limits of the watch when the phone isn't within range?
So my understanding is it only needs the phone to do
what? Did Renee cut out for everybody else?
We lost Renee.
Yeah,
that was a great question.
So you can go running
without the iPhone. Renee is saying the smartest thing he's ever said right now, and nobody can hear him.
He's going to come back and be like, and that's it.
Yeah.
Just like the stream today. Anyone else who was watching the stream, it was like right before the minute they announced the watch.
That stream was the most bizarre thing I've ever done. I ended up just relaxing and being okay with it. because it would skip around in time. They would have various translations going on. I don't know what the hell was happening, but
it seemed to improve over time. It seemed like the translation was loud at the beginning, and they kind of dialed it back. And
it did,
but it wasn't good.
Did I cut out?
No,
on you guys?
I mean, for the watch part, most of it was good.
Did I cut out on you guys? I'm still cut out.
Yeah, a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Your hotel Wi-Fi is showing.
Can you hear me now?
Sure.
Mostly?
It's like, you're like the crappiest Verizon guy ever.
It's good enough if you're recording on your side, too. I don't think there'll be a problem.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be fine.
Like, your voice sounds robotic because it is, like, cutting out and distorted. Can you hear us, Renee?
I can hear you perfectly. So frustrating.
Okay.
Okay. We can hear you now.
Basically, you need the phone if you want to tether for Wi-Fi or cellular. If you just want to go running with it, it'll still record all your information. It can still do the NFC stuff because that radio is built in. Now, this is just my understanding. I could be wrong. So it's basically, think about it like a shuttlecraft that's leaving the Enterprise. It can't do everything that the Starship can do, but it can do a small subset of things. So it's basically a light, you know, or, you know, maybe like a Viper from the Galactic. Like a,
it has a set of...
Yeah.
It does it have GPS?
Life-sustaining capabilities.
I think it might have GPS. I'll have to double-check that because I remember them saying GPS, but I don't remember.
It's going to have GPS because it... Yeah, it tracks your running, though, right? Wasn't that one of the big selling points? I mean, it would have to have GPS.
But do you have to have your iPhone with you for that tracking to work? GPS, that's my question, because I don't run with my iPhone. Yeah?
Really?
Yeah, there's a bunch of questions there. Like, a barometer to track... Going upstairs seems a little weird to me.
Yeah, but my wife wants that. She's like, I'm up and downstairs all day, and I want credit, damn it.
No, I think that's great. I'm just like, really? A barometer? Yeah. I mean, air pressure changes all the time.
Yeah, it's a barometer. That's how they're tracking. It's not altimeter.
Yeah, like it seems a little
That
fuzzy.
Seems real strange.
It seemed fuzzy to me, like that, you know, a storm front moves in and you're all of a sudden you're like
I went up 200 flights of stairs today while the hurricane passed overhead.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a new app coming that we don't know about, like Storm Predictor or something like that.
Maybe.
Who knows?
That'd be cool.
Oh, Apple's
I'd be fine with that.
Weather. Everyone with a watch is going to feed back into the weather app.
Now that's cool.
See, there's another million dollar idea. Thanks, man.
Wow.
That's two.
someone just made $2 million.
$2 million handed out right on this show. Good work. Let's just not release this one.
But we'll be able to know definitively if it's raining or not. And it's about time.
Right. One thing that I did find really cool about the watch was that it is pressure sensitive. And I don't mean barometer-wise. I mean it can tell how hard you're pressing the screen.
Yeah. What was the term they were using for that?
Force.
Yeah, force press.
Force.
Force touch. That's right. He's like, I'm going to force touch the screen. And
yeah, so a
right?
touch
is
like
that what
a selection, and a force touch brings up a context-sensitive thing. Almost not really a right-click, but sort of that idea.
Hmm.
How does that feel? Or, go ahead.
I was just going to say, how do we not have that on the iPhone? That's as soon as they announced it, I was severely disappointed that didn't migrate to the iPhone too.
Exactly. I don't know how you have that kind of thing introduced on the watch and don't put it in the iPhone 6. Except, you know, product stuff. Like it'll get there eventually. But it's such a great idea.
Maybe the technology only supports small displays because I think they're using a ring of things outside the screen to detect it.
Did you get a chance to play with it?
I only got a chance to have the demo software running on me. So I could feel the taptics, which is like haptics, but they're calling it taptics. But only the Apple people could actually use the watch because I think not enough of it was working. They wanted to put it in filthy, you know, press people's hands.
So what's the process? They'd strap the device onto your wrist and then they would manipulate it?
No. So if you ever go to the Apple store and you watch the phones on the counter, they're just running a demo of all the things it can do. That's what they put a watch on you that basically did that. It was running a demo app. And then on their wrist was a live watch that they could show you different things.
Okay. So you didn't actually get to interact really with the crown and
no.
and see how that felt.
I had to watch them do it.
Renee, how is the tap feedback on your wrist? Did it feel like a vibration, or did it feel like somebody actually tapping you?
It felt like a vibration, but I realized how insensitive I was because it will vibrate left or right to have you turn that way, which is huge for accessibility. I mean, I'm still impressed with what Apple's doing for accessibility, but I felt like I'd have to wear it for a while before I'd be sensitive enough to really determine what it was trying to tell me.
Because it'll vibrate. So, like, if I do that thing where I tap your face and then send you three little vibrations, it will vibrate your wrist in those places? Was that?
I think you can even send.
That's what I understood.
You can even send me your heartbeat, Di.
I can send you what? Oh, your heartbeat? Yeah. No, I don't like you that much.
Can you send like a continuous stream of your heartbeat, or is it only just like a small snippet?
I think it's a snippet.
Like, could two people? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a little weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I was cracking jokes about it on Twitter, but I did see a medical use case for that. But if you can only send a small snippet, it doesn't seem that useful.
It's weird, right? You have two dedicated buttons. You have the crown, and then you have this button. All this button does is bring up that little weird watch messenger thing that lets you send your taps or draw a little picture. It's an entire button just to access that app, just to send people quick watch things.
Really? That button is just for your, like, it brings up that friends view,
yeah.
Effectively, right?
It did seem weird when he was going through the demo and he's like, oh, we've developed this secret way of communicating. I do three taps for lunch and then he responds with this and I'm going to respond with this drawing of a fish. And I was sort of thinking, is that something people want to do? Create their own, like, you know, mini language with
cute
another
little
person
language with,
to communicate?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure if I want to.
It's like beep.
Plus, you know what? I guarantee you, neither of those guys do that. No. When they want to go to lunch.
Right.
<It's like>
they probably send a text.
That does not happen.
It's like pin messaging in the
they
old days.
They have their assistant set something up.
You know, when phones were things like early generation Blackberries where they had pin-to-pin messaging and it showed that you were an executive and you could afford a Blackberry because you could contact somebody by pin. Now you can contact somebody by this watch thing, but both of you have to be in the exclusive Apple Watch Owners Club.
It's still goofy, though.
Yep.
I mean, I don't want to draw a fish to invite Brent out for lunch. Like, that's not going to happen.
It seems like a solution without a problem, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And yet they've dedicated the entire button to get to that.
Yeah.
I think it's massively cute, and I think people are going to enjoy the hell out of it. It's an easy way to be a little creative with, you know, friends and family. Nothing at all wrong with that. It seems
animated,
very Apple-y and just kind of fun.
It feels Apple-y. It feels a little trite to me. Or
Apple is frequently extremely trite.
Maybe. Neither you or I would write that, though. Like,
no.
Right.
High school kids are going to use the crap out of it, though. I mean, that's
hell
the
yes.
stuff they love.
That's true.
Do you know how many?
And then Apple customers for life.
Yeah. There's going to be so many crappy penises drawn on that thing. It's not even funny.
What concerns me is that they said it just works through your contacts. So, for example, Brent, I have your phone number. I can send you cartoon penises all day long without you saying that I will receive this message. It seems like it's pretty open to just spam. Like, if I'm sitting there in the middle of a meeting and somebody's tapping at me that I don't even know because they have my iMessage ID, that's going to be pretty irritating.
There's not a lot to be gamed by just tapping you and sending you random pictures, though. It's not like, oh, then you'll come to my website and buy
well,
my,
I mean, you annoy somebody.
Human growth hormone.
You can do a denial of a service effectively, right? And is it through iMessage or is it through proximity? Like, do the watches in a certain area find each other?
They didn't say. But
that's a good question.
Sounds like if they were talking in an office, that would have to have some range to it. Especially in an Apple-sized office. Because, I mean, if you want to ask Brent if he wants sushi and your desk is next to him, you can just ask him. You have to send him something, unless you want to deliberately be cute about it.
Yeah, that would be awesome if you if you had to be within a 12-foot radius and you're like, you're drawing a fish on your phone instead of just talking to the person, you're doing it wrong.
You're like redrawing it because you don't get the tail quite right.
Whiskers
like
could send,
it 20 times.
Whiskers could send Brent interface ideas and Brent could respond back with custom angry or happy animated emoji.
So those were funny. That was, I mean, Vicky, you'd know best, but that did not seem Apple-y to me.
I was thinking the same thing, just that, you know, iOS 7 came out and it's this very flat UI.
Right. Yeah.
And then there's this like weird 3D, a few weird 3D objects there. And it's like, well, why are these ones 3D, but then nothing else is? And how does that sort of, you know, how do they all sort of fit together cohesively? Is this like a good design? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see that though, for sure. I mean, it looked interesting.
Yeah. But it's like posable animated 3D stickers, basically, right?
I guess so. That's another thing I'm not sure I'd enjoy. I'd enjoy changing that face a few times.
Right.
You know, but a year later, do I want to be, can I just pick the face from a list that has the tongue sticking out? Or do I always have to like pull up the one face and then like tap it this way and then do this and then three other taps and then I get to send it, you know? So I don't know. Maybe that's one of those things that was in the demo and we'll see for a while and it'll fall off the table over time.
Yeah.
Who knows? But
it seemed like there was a few things like that in the demo. Tapping the moon to move from the earth, fly from the earth to the moon.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. Why? why would I do that? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I can see it doing it once, but like, why is that a permanent feature that I'm accidentally going to tap and then have to like scroll back in from the solar system to my watch face?
Yeah. It's cool.
I have this idea that it's like cover flow, that every time Apple makes a new device, they have to have something that when you buy it, you will show it to your friends as a way of justifying to your friends why you bought it. Like, look, I have this new watch. I can travel through outer space and send you an animated emoji.
I can fly from the earth to the moon and then send you like a happy face with this.
It's like the thing you demo instead of like HTV or all peekaboo in the original iPad.
Do we think this is a viable platform for software?
What do you mean by viable?
Are we going to make any money off this?
No.
I don't think so.
Are indie devs going to make money off this, or are people
Yeah.
Because there's a strong divide line here between people who are making their own money and people who are getting paid to put other people's apps on here.
Yeah, okay, so both of those are interesting. Do indie developers – are indie developers going to have this as a value – like a viable platform? I think that's going to be a hard proposition, if only because it's hard on iOS anyway. And this is going to be a subset of that necessarily because it can only address iPhone 5 and up for now.
I think this becomes like a checklist item. Like, you have to do the watch integration before you ship your app, if it makes any sense at all. It's just going to be, you know, and maybe that's sometimes it's whatever the special notification thing, or maybe it's a separate native app, but it's just like another requirement.
Yeah. I think I see this more as doing, one of those iOS 8 extensions kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah. Kyle, what's your take?
Yeah, I think there's going to be certain apps that are going to do very well on it. It's going to be a much smaller subset than we see on the iPhone. Like, for example, Runkeeper. Yeah, they're probably going to have a really extensive, you know, watch app. But as far as, you know, normal developers being able to make a run on the watch, I don't think there's just enough use cases out there to warrant software. Now, as far as big companies wanting to have their stuff in the app, there's going to be a lot of money for that in the for-hire market. If you're looking to make some money doing development, I think there's going to be a real big rush of people wanting to get on the Apple Watch in the next few months.
Yeah, I think a lot of stuff will end up being basically free.
Yeah. Do we even know if you could sell apps on the Apple Watch yet. I mean, they didn't mention App Store and anything like that. The way that I'm viewing it is they all have to be an iPhone app that's a, you know, add-on. But I mean,
that's my take with WatchKit. But Vinay mentioned something about native apps, which I don't know if we have any news on.
Yeah.
Coming next year.
Coming next year. Okay. That makes sense. Vicky, do you have any thoughts on this?
Will people make money from their apps on the phone, on the watch?
Well, yeah. I mean, do you think it's a market?
It's hard to say. I think it's going to be interesting, like from a UI perspective, to see what people come up with in good ways and bad ways for their interfaces on the watch. I mean, it's just a completely new, you know, way to interact with UI. And I think that'll be an interesting challenge for a lot of designers out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's so much, unfortunately, so much bad UI in the App Store already. You know, a lot of people, you know, just don't really focus on that. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of, is the simplicity of the watch making people simplify things enough that their UI is okay? Or are people going to be trying to cram a bunch into this little space?
Right.
I think it'll be pretty interesting. But, you know, other companies have made watches, and it's interesting that, you know, here on day one, Apple has at least a few companies that have apps on the watch already. So it seems like, you know, even though these other companies have come before and made watches, it's really only Apple that can, at least it seems that way to me, only Apple that can sort of bring all of these companies over to this new device and get them creating something for it. And that could be pretty compelling for users.
Yeah, I'll agree with that for sure. One thing that, I imagine Vicky, you're a little bit different because you were behind the curtain on this one. But when the iPhone was introduced, I immediately wanted to write software for it, and I could imagine the software that I wanted to write for it. That's less the case for the Apple Watch. Mm. I'm super intrigued by it, but I don't know what I want to do with it yet. Does anybody else have any? Do we agree on that? Like, is that a common feeling?
Well, I think I know what I want to do with it. I'm just wondering, you know, how well it's going to fit into that small space.
Right.
But my app is just some words. Here, I want to show you your words. Problem. Yeah, it is.
I pulled up the language. Just
yeah, you actually have a very great app for it. I think it's going to fit very well, right?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
Pulled up the language from Apple's PR. They say, with Apple Watch, developers can create WatchKit apps with actionable notifications and glances that provide timely information. Starting later next year, developers will be able to create fully native apps for Apple Watch.
Hmm.
Cool.
So it's almost like you're being guided into creating something simple in the beginning. You know, a glance or what was the other term that you used?
Actionable notification.
Or a notification. Yeah. Exactly. So.
And, real-time follow-up friend of the show, Don Melton, says that he bets there's WebKit all over the inside of the SDK on this.
That's interesting. Why does he say
that? Because I mentioned on Twitter that I didn't see any Safari, and Don's response was, yeah, I bet you're still going to find WebKit inside, though.
Really use WebKit. Yeah, I'd imagine so. Man, if only we had somebody who knew something about the web here.
UK WebView. It's great for laying stuff out.
Well, you can be with WWDC, how excited you were for UK WebView.
Yeah, WK WebView. I am excited about it. It would be interesting to know kind of what the internals are for everything that you see on the watch.
Why are you excited?
I hadn't thought about that, but go ahead.
I was going to say, why are you excited for UK WebView in general? Just because of the speed?
Sure. I think because of the speed, and also because it'll allow developers to do more, do a lot of things that they probably wanted to do in the past. So it's just a step forward for that piece of API, I think.
Yeah, no, I think it's a big step forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I am curious. I mean, Vinay, is there any webby web stuff on the watch at all? Like, what happened? Can you see email? Like, if I send you an HTML email, what happens?
I didn't see email. They did show a full, quote-unquote, full Twitter app running, though, which has got to be pulling HTTP data at the very least. But I didn't see any webby web stuff.
Sure. I mean, yeah, but HTTP, yeah, that doesn't really count as web stuff. I mean, there's...
I didn't see
Safari. Yeah, I divorce HTTP, like the transport is separate from the rendering, right?
Yeah.
We don't know what this... We haven't seen the SDK yet.
Well, something's got to be drawing that. Right. So...
I mean, that's going to be interesting because I think the web stuff is usually lighter weight, but if the performance hasn't been there. And this is running an S1 chip, something we haven't seen before. We know nothing about. It's not an A8 chip like the new iPhone. It's an S1 chip. What can that thing really do?
Oh, I didn't know that. Did I miss that in my Kafka stream?
Yeah.
Because...
There's basically
they explained what the chip is about, right?
There's two components inside the watch. There's the taptic feedback engine, and then there's this totally integrated board called the S1, which does everything else.
Can you tell us more about the S1?
They haven't said anything as far as I can tell about it yet. I mean, I haven't had a chance to look at Apple.com, but at least there they just said it was S1.
It's kind of interesting that they didn't go with... you know, like an A7 or an A6 or an A8.
It's a totally different thing. Like, it's not a system on chip. It's an entirely integrated board, it looks like.
That's intriguing.
Yeah, and it's weirdly shaped.
Imagine that they had
the way they put it, it was like a computer, essentially. That was a whole computer on a chip. For whatever that means.
I wonder why.
I imagine a lot of it has to do with the battery life. Yeah. I mean, you know, beyond having to charge every day, this thing is not giant. You can't put a big battery in it. So I'm sure they're trying to squeeze out every single cycle they can.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's kind of funny to think that the phones are now the beefy guys.
Well, actually, Guy,
they can afford the big battery, right?
We didn't see any gaming on the watch either. Like, they talked about apps for the watch, but, you know, there was no talk and no demonstration of games. And that's usually like
they did have a solitaire icon on there at one point, but they didn't open it or anything. But I mean, solitaire is not a game. I mean, it's not drawing anything.
That's interesting.
They do have a section on the website about the S1. It doesn't say anything significant. It's just, we designed a new chip type deal.
No big deal.
We did see a metal demo for the iPhone 6, the A8 chip, and that was impressive.
Yeah, that I got kind of, that's where my Apple TV got locked up on my Apple event stream. So I missed all of that stuff. Games are looking pretty cool these days, though.
Yeah. One thing they didn't spend. Tim Cook made a passing reference that he could control his Apple TV with the Apple Watch, but they didn't get into HomeKit anywhere nearly as much as I thought they would.
No, so you got into that big white building, right?
Yeah, that big building was just the demo area. All it was were tables laid out with iPhones and Apple Watches.
Okay, so that was like the Stormtrooper barracks, basically?
Yeah, I mean...
Like black and white, and had that... Yeah.
I guess because there was no room for... Like, Apple usually has a room where press can go and get hands-on time with devices, and there was no room in the Flint Center, or at least no convenient room, so they built their own basic shelter outside where press could go and try out all this stuff.
Okay, so there's nothing crazy in there at all, just but space.
It looked like an Apple store with all the new products.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't really get into HomeKit that much. A watch with HomeKit seems to make a lot of sense to me.
I'm hoping it has it, because again, he said he could control his Apple TV with it, and that's at least some form of...
Take a quick break so I can tell you about Lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help individuals and organizations learn instantly, stream thousands of courses created by experts on software, web deployment, graphic design, and more. So here's what makes Lynda awesome. It's got fresh content. New courses are added daily. They work with industry experts. Software companies provide timely training. Often the same day new versions or releases hit the market. So you're always up to speed. Easy learning. They got high quality, easy to follow video tutorials. All of them are produced fabulously. They have searchable transcripts, playlists, certificates of course completion, and you can even publish those to your LinkedIn profile. They're like achievement unlocks. From beginners to advanced, if you're just starting to learn something and you want to find out how to get up to speed quickly, they've got you covered. If you've been using it for a while, but you really want to take it to another level, they've got you covered for that too. And you know, there's mobile apps, so you can use it on your iPhone, your iPad, your Android, and of course, you can use it on the web. It's segmented, so you can learn just for a few minutes if you want to, or you can spend an hour on it. However much time you have, they have an easily digestible course amount to give you. And because there's one low monthly price, $25 gives you unlimited access to over 100,000 tutorials. Here are some examples. Managing your mobile photos, Google Docs and Sheets for iOS, iPad for Business, up and running with OpenGL. OpenGL, creating mobile games with Unity. So again, the whole gamut. If you just want to learn how to do bookkeeping for the first time, they're there. If you want to learn how to make polygons fly around the screen, they're there for you too. So here's what I want you to do. We've got a deal with Lynda.com so you can try. You can get special access to all the courses. Again, that's thousands of courses for free for 7 days. Just go to lynda.com/debug. That's lynda.com/debug. Sign up. You get to try everything for free for 7 days, and I'm pretty sure you're going to love it. Thanks, Lynda.
Yeah. Okay. Vicky, any final thoughts on today's events?
Wow, why do you have to go to me first?
Because you're the smartest.
I thought it was a really interesting event. It seems like some new directions for Apple, which is a good thing. I probably won't be getting a huge phone, but I'll definitely be getting a watch. And I'm looking forward to seeing what people develop for it.
Right. What kind of strap?
Oh, man. The tough questions today.
Yeah. I'm filling out your order form right now.
probably a white strap is what I'm thinking.
Okay. Like a white sporty one?
Like either the white sporty one, or I think there's a white leather one too. Okay.
That's cool. Kyle?
Yeah, I view this as the first real Tim Cook product. It feels like everything else was still, you know, at least kind of guided a little bit by Steve.
Sure.
So it's real interesting to see the first real transition, I think, that we've seen there, because we all know that Apple plans their products many years in advance. And I think it was a real good first run for him. I think it, you know, really handed the torch over, and you know, it proves that Apple can continue to innovate and make really cool things without a certain, you know, single person at the helm of it, which is very, very cool to see. Right. It's going to take a couple of months to see what's, you know, going to come out of all this. Multiple screen sizes, new resolutions, new behaviors, you know, a completely new device. It's going to take a long time to, you know, wrap heads around and see what this all actually means to us. But it bodes very well for 2015.
I agree. I'm excited. What are you going to buy?
I mean, I want the 4.7, but I think I'm going to get stuck with the 5.5 on the iPhone,
yep,
just due to the work factor.
Right.
As far as the Apple Watch, you know, that standard, not sport, not, you know, special one, just the normal one, I guess, with the linked band is the one that's most appealing to me right now. But I'm sure once I start touching stuff in the store, I'm going to buy just about everything they make.
So. Yeah, I think I'm the same way. I didn't buy an iPhone until I was with Brent actually in San Francisco, I played with an iPhone in the Apple Store. Do you remember that brand?
Chicago, actually.
Was it
right?
Chicago?
I think it was at a Singleton event. No, or C4, I'm sorry.
Could have been. I don't know. We were at an Apple Store, and I broke down. Like, as soon as I touched an iPhone, I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy that. They didn't even work in Canada yet.
Yeah, you had to have it, though.
Oh, God, yeah, I had to have it. I tried dialing. Like, I almost dialed 911 just because, you know. Man, that was great. Finally jailbroke it, like, a couple of weeks in. But, yeah, I think after I play with the watch, I'm going to be enthralled.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I think I'm totally in your camp. I'm going to end up getting stuck with a larger phone than I think I want. And maybe I'll end up liking it. And the watch, you know, it seems like something that I, A, have to have for work in some way, and B, I kind of want to just experience.
It does feel a little bit like the watch is really Johnny Unleashed. Yes. You know, it's very, there's all these little design points integrated into it, mm-hmm. you know, and, it feels like it's a very highly designed product, which isn't a bad thing, but it does sort of have that feeling to me. Johnny Unleashed, the Apple Watch.
I love that they incorporated the crown.
Yes.
Which is, you know, obviously a feature of mechanical watches going back to forever. But the fact that they used it as like a click wheel kind of thing, I thought was very clever.
What I find super interesting about the design is this is the first Apple product that we've really had where there's, you know, hundreds of different combinations of design between, you know, the dozens of watch bands, the three faces. You've never seen Apple give us so many options for how something should look before. It's a real drive away from the "we know what's best for you, here it is" kind of mentality.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, because of given the way that the bands connect, I mean, it's pretty obvious we're going to see all kinds of designer bands coming, right?
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, just the slide in, slide out. It sounds like anybody can make a band. Yeah. So.
I'm a little freaked out by the magnetic locking band because I don't trust it that much, but whatever. I haven't tried it.
Wraps around a lot.
I'd hate to have my like $500 watch go flying off my wrist because the magnets failed, but whatever. Brent, your take?
I think we're going to remember this year for a long time, right? Between WWDC and today, this has been a year of revolutions. I mean, we even have a new language to learn. My hope is that Apple settles down to concentrating on executing and doing incremental improvements for a while, because, you know, there's an awful lot of work we all have to do to catch up here. And I hope they're not going to try to sustain this crazy pace.
I feel like we've been saying that for the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
It's always something like...
Yeah, that is true. But still, this year, way more than last year, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So hopefully it can go at least a little bit back to normal.
I haven't even gotten
next
Max yet, friends.
We'll see. Oh, God.
So, Renee, I mean, you're on the scene. What do you think, and what's the vibe going around? Like, what's the buzz?
It was sort of like WWDC. All the engineers were smiling because they knew they were going to show us Swift and they knew they were going to show us extensibility and continuity. This year, it felt like all the product guys were smiling because they knew they were going to show us the watch. And I agree with Vicky. This feels like a really Johnny Ive and Tim Cook product. You know, like the design driven and the health driven. You know, it's going to tell you to stand up. It's going to tell you if you did 30 minutes of exercise. It's going to tell you, it's going to run fitness for you and workouts for you if you want it to. I'm probably going to get a 5.5-inch phone just because I want the optical image stabilization and I want the split view Apple apps. And I think I'm going to get a cheap iWatch because as exciting as iWatch is, this is the original iPhone and original iPad of Apple's watches. And I know 2-3 years from now, there's going to be a really like the iPad Air and iPhone 6 version of this. And I don't want to spend like a grand up front for an edition watch if I'm going to be replacing it every year for the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think that they're gonna keep the 12-month release cycle with the iWatch or the Apple Watch? Because that sounds as crazy.
I don't know, but I mean, they plan product lines, not products, so they're already working on, you know, second, third generation.
I mean, the iPhone is something that, you know, starts feeling old. It's a processor you're using constantly, and the iPad and computers. But it feels like an Apple Watch is something that you should be able to get a few years out of before, you know, it starts to get old on you. And if we're seeing them every year, that's a crazy schedule for Apple to try to keep on top of.
Apple TV hasn't been updated since 2010. So, I mean, maybe not everything's on a one-year cycle. 2012, sorry.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with Kyle. Like, a watch feels like it should stick around for a bit.
Yeah, my Apple TV doesn't feel even remotely old. I mean, right. I don't sit around wishing for a faster Apple TV or anything.
Well, I did today when the Apple live stream took out my Apple TV. And I had to reboot it 3 times.
That may not have been the Apple TV.
Yeah. God damn it. We don't know yet, but the 5.5 looks like it's got the at 3x UI image stuff going on. That sounds like a pain in the ass to me. And I think that's all we can say until we start actually trying to develop for it.
Well, it's 1080p.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, DPI, so it has to have high density.
Yeah, but you can't do a one pixel line anymore, right? Well, I mean, you could, but things get weird at 3X.
Yeah.
Well, we started digging into the at 3X today for Slender because we wanted to obviously get support for it done as soon as possible. And,
right.
You know, it doesn't feel much different than at 2X. It's, you know, just another one in there. It's built into the asset catalog stuff. And, you know, it's same old as far as, you know, I can see so far. It's just one more to do.
Well, from that side, sure. But from the rendering side, things get a little dicey, right? Like, how do you center something?
Is it like the Mac?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's...
I think everybody just cut out.
Things should still center right. Just because you're at a different resolution doesn't mean that, you know, things aren't going to center. It should be, you know, imperceptible because you're not drawing at pixels, you're drawing at points. Or is it the other way around?
No, you're correct. Yeah. I mean, but it's going to land on a pixel at some point, right? So, I mean, if you have something that's an even number of pixels or points wide, and you have a screen that's an even number of points wide, you can divide and you can put it nicely. But if you've got like a 32 by 32 image, that's tiny. Let's say you've got a 64 by 64 or 128 by 128 image, and you try to place it on a screen that is indivisible by two. Something's going to get a little bit weird, right?
So, I mean, if we're talking at 3X and we're following Apple's conventions, the image should conform to a multiple of three. So when you lay it down, it should take up 3 pixels. And those 3 pixels represent 1 point.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
So, I mean, certainly if you're, you know, playing around trying to do like a 1 pixel line on an at 3X display, yeah, it's going to be real weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're following the terminology that, you know, your standard 1X is, you know, the width, and then 2X is double, and then 3X is, you know, in theory, triple.
Yeah.
It should work, but, you know, unfortunately, designers tend not to follow that too often.
Sure. I mean, and the other thing is, at 400 DPI, maybe you can get away with having a little bit of goofiness, you know?
Well, they're going to have...
I can't see pixels at 2X to start with. I don't know what's the point of 3X is.
And they're going to do display zoom anyway, where they scale up the whole image. So you have to put at 400 DPI, are you going to see the blur? I mean, some designers are going to hate that idea, but they'll get over it.
Well, at a certain DPI, I mean, like, theoretically, like a 1200 DPI, just does not matter. Nobody alive is going to be able to figure it out, right?
Except for Louis Mint, yeah.
Good enough. Yeah, Louis is going to be an asshole about that for sure. Vicky, any thoughts on the final thoughts on the screen?
No.
I keep sticking it to
really.
You, and I don't mean to. I'm sorry.
You're the web person. The web's been responsible for years.
I don't have any.
Yeah, because
it
occurred to me that like web stuff would deal with this in some way. Is that going to affect any web stuff?
Probably. There's a few things out there now for supplying a 2x image as like a CSS background, right, or for an image tag. So,
because it feels to me that they just kind of standardized doing those image sets, right? Am I? Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think even like if you were to use an image tag, you know, I think you're using the word standardized loosely the spec has been written, but like, you know, not everyone has come to consensus on it, sure, and I'm not sure who's implemented it yet, et cetera. So, you know, maybe it'll probably just be an extension onto those things where you could do 1x and 2x. Now you can do 1, 2, and 3x. Yeah. But yeah, it should be interesting.
Yeah. Life's getting complicated. Well, life is always complicated.
Someone keeps asking me for my final thoughts. So.
I know. It's like over and over. It's been like 45 minutes of final thoughts.
We're going to do an iterate show on Thursday, and Whiskers is going to come on, and Mark Edwards will be there, so we can just make this all their problem.
Perfect. Yes. Let's just dump it on them.
That's what they're for.
Okay, everybody. Thanks a lot. It's been a blast. I think we're going to have a lot more interesting questions coming up as we sort of unpack all of this in the coming days and weeks. But pretty exciting day.
Definitely.
Yeah, super exciting.
Cool. So where do we find everybody? Let's start with, let's say Vicky.
Oh, where to find me? Like via Twitter, et cetera?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I'm at Vicky Murley on Twitter. And my second book on web programming is coming out in 2 weeks. It's called CSS Animation, an Interactive Guide. And you can find it available for pre-order on iTunes or at cssanimationbook.com.
And I hear it comes with a free iWatch. So everybody go, everybody go out and buy that immediately.
Surprise.
Go out and buy that.
That's
right now.
That's the new announcement for today. Yeah.
Brent?
You can find me on the web at inessential.com. And there's links there to all the other things.
Which is actually essential reading. You've been on the show a lot, but good work on your web blog.
And by
thank you.
By lots of Vesper.
Yes. Vesper comes with free iWatch also.
That's a bargain.
Kyle, I hear you're giving out Mac Pros.
Yeah, Mac Pros with any $1 million custom development job. Yeah, for sure. So I can be found on Twitter at Kyle Richter or at martiancraft.com.
And do you want to pimp a specific app? Slender, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, well, Slender we're definitely working on to support the new iPhone 6 interfaces, and that should be out later this week.
Perfect.
How's Resolve doing?
Resolve is doing great. We're currently working on a big new update for it with a redesign and additional backends. So stay tuned for that in the next few months.
Awesome. Cool. So all kinds of good stuff going on. Thanks, everybody. That's been a blast.
Guy, you don't want to pimp yourself out a little bit?
I probably should. It's funny. Here's a funny thing. Earlier this afternoon, we had a meeting for my company, Agents Distilled, where we're like, yeah, we should really try to like market our product more. And then I forgot.
And what product is that?
It's a product called Napkin, which helps you quickly and concisely mark up images for design iteration and, you know, quick visual communication. And you can find me at
the free app.
With the whole store. Exactly. Yeah. Tim Cook will come and personally install it on your computer. And I'm at GTE on Twitter. So thanks, Carl, for reminding me of that.
Who would look after you if I wasn't around, Guy?
I can't imagine a world where that would be the case. That was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
And I want to once again thank Hired.com for supporting the show. Use Hired.com/debugpodcast to get 5 to 15 job offers in San Francisco, New York, and Los Angeles, and also get a double signing bonus, a $4,000 bonus when you accept a job using the Hired.com/debugpodcast URL.